session number 11194, Reel 4.
And then, of course, we the Germans evacuated, and for a brief few hours before the Russians came in, we went down to the village, and probably a couple of days, I suppose. I've got some armbands and things I'll show you, the Nazi armbands and things that I got from the local headquarters there. But there's nothing to do, really.
Was it safe to move out of the camp?
Well, we see they were shooting each other off. We were in uniform. We could have been a target for either side, you see. So we were a little bit sceptical about that. So we kept to our area. Anyway, the next thing was arrival of the Russian girl. She's about 25, 26, I suppose. About 6 foot three, I should think. Enormous great bosom, you know, hard as nails. And she had a row of medals, and a sword, and a pistol, and cavalry breeches and boots. And she'd been a fighter pilot on the conversion course to bombers. And because she was at university, spoke German, they put her in to take over nominally, you know, until somebody else came along. Anyway, she came in, and I got on quite well with the German, and it was quite incredible. They really believed they were Curtiss aircraft, American, but they were Russian insignia on the Red Star. And I said, good God, the Americans have been helping you marvellously. She says, Americans, you know, she bristled. And so I said, look at those aircraft. So we have no equipment at all we make it all. I said, good God, your trucks outside are American. So I went out, opened the bonnet there, you know, there was an English, fill up with it. I said, look at that, all in English. Of course it is. We put it on there to help you when we lend them to you. You know, could that have meant, so they were absolutely indoctrinated, and the guards were doubled up and trebled up, and they used to have a propaganda man used to go around, visit them in groups and tell them all this nonsense. And it was really quite incredible, the gullibility of this girl, because she was a very, very brilliant girl in her way, she must be. Then she was succeeded by some awful man, absolute drunk, and he came with lots of other people then, and the commandeer, where the Germans had been. And one day I had to let in through the gateway a truckload of mattresses. And in the cab, and in amongst the mattresses, were girls. So I said, what's going on? Wir sind Offiziere Spielzeuge, we're officers' toys. They were going in, and this fellow was always drunk. Booze used to come in, and there they were, had four or five wristwatches on each arm, and riding bikes. They'd never seen a bike, but they're getting on and falling off. It's quite incredible, like children, with all our comforts and things that we never took for granted. They're quite incredible people, though. And the spearhead that actually came in, I should think at least, I won't exaggerate, 30% were women. And they had a little scatter gun, which even in my weak state I could hold at arm's length, which women were using. I mean, just spattered bullets, all you want to do, isn't it? And they came in there with a spearhead. And I was, you know, on the gate doing my job. And there was an open track vehicle came in, a huge Russian there. Tavolish, and shook my hand, he dragged me up inside there, and there, all down one side, was women's underclothing inside the hut, and all down the other side were clocks and watches and things, but there was a massive fur coats and women's things, you know, and all the, and I couldn't believe it, and we just loot, and then, what was the next? Oh, yes. about 20 or so young Germans who'd been forced into the forces for the Germans, the young Russians, I mean, for forces of the German to menial tasks, you know, sweeping and scrubbing and mending ditches and washing down tanks, I suppose. And they came, all marched up, you know, singing to the gate. And, they spoke in German, of course, because I can't speak any Russian. And they said they come to give themselves up. So I've come and meet this girl. They went in and, she seemed quite polite with them. Anyway, that was in the morning, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I heard some shooting. So I thought, the next day I saw this girl, I said, what was that shooting yesterday afternoon? You found another pocket of Germans. So I shot those traitors you brought in. True. And, that's the ruthlessness of it. And I remember when they arrived, the Russians in the camp came through, and the excitement they were, but they didn't stop the tanks. They ran over to the other and killed them. The soldiers, they were quite ruthless in their way towards each other. They had the impression, because they'd been taken prisoner, that they were cowards, you know. That was extraordinary attitude. It was because of my job on the gate that I was kept fairly well advised of what was going on, and I knew that the Americans weren't all that far west, because they'd been to pick up their own colleagues about 2 weeks, 3 weeks before, I suppose, and things were getting very bad for us for food, and we complained to the Russians, so they brought in a truckload of flour. Hell of a lot of good flour, isn't it? And we were in a bad way, and I tried to get out with a MacDonald, a Scottish pal of mine, and through what had been a gateway at the back of the camp, which was wired up, and we got out through this wire, and the Russians fired at us, so we ran back rather quickly. Anyway, the next day was my fourth anniversary, 8th of May. And I was in a pretty bloody-minded mood. I felt so distressed. Here we were free. We couldn't go back. We knew they wanted to take us back. Well, they didn't want to. They were going to take us back through Odessa.
Did you know that?
Oh, yes. Yes, they told us. And
did they say why? Did they explain why? They were going to take you back to Odessa.
Oh, they inferred it would be a nice trip for us. We didn't want to come home, of course. We're much in to see Russia. That was a sort of silly nonsense. But on this particular day, I was particularly bloody-minded. And some woman came. There'd been a work commando there for some extraordinary reason. The Irish were considered to be mercenaries and fighting for the money, and would go over to anybody for the money. And they'd formed this camp earlier on. The Germans had propaganda camp, and I believe one or two Irishmen did go over to the Shamrock Corps. They wore the German uniform with the Shamrock on their sleeve, and they'd been shot for sabotage.
By the Russians, they were shot.
By the Germans. They went over to the German side. The Germans incarcerated them there in this special camp. Anyway, it had become quite a big work commando in a rather big farming area. And the women were glad to have the men to look after them while their husbands were away. And there's a lot of that sort of thing going on. And when we were moved, they kicked out all the Irish gunners where they went. But on this my anniversary, this German woman came along with a tunic, a khaki tunic over her arm, and a little girl with her, about or 12, 13, I suppose, and she said that she got Sergeant O'Leary or Flanagan or somebody's coat, jacket, could you give it back to him? I said, well, he'd been gone for weeks, you know that. So I look at my daughter, of course, the kid was soaked in blood. She'd been raped, and my daughter, you know, I felt awful. And but I felt such a mood. I said, well, the old man was doing that. You say he's on the East Front, he must have been doing the same, having a whale of a time, you know. Well, what do you expect? They're going to get their own back, aren't they? So they were all getting excited. And all these Russians, guards, God knows them, they were all crowding round, and I had a pole. He spoke Russian and German to me, you see. And he was interrogating what I was saying, what she was saying. And I gave him a funny sort of look. And so he was going into great labour detail, you know. And I gradually edged round into the road. And my tunic was all burned when I was captured. And I was trying to get the engineer out of the engine room of the launch. And, of course, it was like film flames came, and I lost all my eyebrows and moustache and all but tunic. Anyway, I got a ghastly mixture. I got a Tommy's overcoat, and I got a pair of blue trousers. I don't know who they were, the Chinese, I think, were from the... When we were... and some Belgian boots when we were giving clothes away at 6B. And I had my officer's side cap, if there was anything out of Air Force. My black ties, I still had that, and my khaki shirt. I must have looked like, you know, Fred Karno's army. And anyway, I got round behind this mob of gaggling Russians, and I started to go west. No one took any notice, and I walked past that lot, past the middle box, and past the end box, you know, expecting a bullet between my shoulder blades, and God, free! And I got walked, I don't know, an hour or so, and the road gradually dropped down each side. It was a flood area, and the fields dropped down each side. I mean, the road continued straight. It was quite a drop. And I saw this jeep coming. Oh, my God! Russians, because they got all American equipment, as I said before. And I just soldier on and hope for the best. Because, I mean, they could have killed me. They didn't know who I was, whatever side. Americans could have killed me. Came right up to me, stopped dead. It's a nigger, all by himself. Don't you want to ride, massa? I do want a bloody ride, you know. So I leapt on the thing. I just couldn't even get in it. I was so excited. And he started driving. I said, no, Russians. And he went a sort of a sickly, whitey cream, I know, funny looking colour, and stopped dead, you know. So eventually turned round, and I said, what's the matter? So he said, I'm a deserter. So it turned out he and three of his mates had picked up four German girls, and they'd been having a real old beat up because the place was evacuated, empty places, and they'd found a farm. And there was wine and food and that, spent the night there with these girls, and during the night there was a noise, and they all ran down, and some Russians came in and killed the lot. He was fortunately knocked down and was underneath. He was the only one who survived, and he lay there for hours waiting, and then he thought he would he heard them go away, so he managed to get out, and lo and behold, it was his jeep. And he got in it, and he met me, and that was it. So we started to go back west, you see, and he told me about his story. He was deserter and that. I said, well, look, I'm the equivalent of a major in your army, and I can explain how you've rescued me, and you tell them what you like. So he beamed, and we went ahead. And as we went along, I saw up here an army group, you see. So, well, wait a minute. He'd seen them, but he knew it was American. Anyway, I made him go up there, and there was a nice young captain, and there was a half-track vehicle and two or three trucks, nothing very much, probably about 30 men. And this young captain, I introduced myself, and I said, this fellow ought to be decorated. I said, he's a marvellous bloke. And, I said, he'll tell you the story. So we got on, and we started going west. And on the way, he told me all about the withdrawal across the Elbe. And we were the last vehicle across. And we was getting, getting late, and I was getting worried, because the Russians were mad, they were drunk, and they were shooting all round us. He confirmed then again about the going back to Odessa bit. He knew all about that. The Russians were holding on to us, and because he'd heard it from his own friends and the general intelligence.
Now, this relates very much, we must get this very clear, about the repatriation issue,
yes.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
Could you explain, the situation? That are you implying that the prisoners were going to be held back?
Yes. And there was a...
Oh, sorry. There we are.
To make it clearer, I knew Luckenwalde, that we were being held there because being on the gate, I was having this Pole as my interpreter. Officers used to come around and inspect the guard, and I used to ask him to ask them questions about what was going on. I was also thick with this Russian girl inside, and not so thick with her successor because he was always drunk, but they confirmed that it wasn't a question of holding us hostage, but in their way, they thought that it would be marvellous. We'd been incarcerated. It gives a nice welcome home via Russia, which was obviously stinks. Anyway, this young captain, who was had been with intelligence, he was aware of this business going on because Luckenwalde had primarily been a camp. For officers, after they kicked out the Irish, the idea of holding officers of each of the different countries there, to the Germans to use us as hostages against the imminent peace talks, and then the Russian must have found this with their intelligence and cottoned on the idea and carried it forward. And when I was interrogated, when I got to Schönebeck, the other side of the river, where the American headquarters, this boy was going to, was attached. And I was interrogated there, and they reaffirmed this business about Odessa and that we were being held as hostages. And I think there was one other camp and possibly two other camps with us. So they had quite a holding of probably 4,000 or 5,000 British officers.
What were they wanting in return, the Russians, then? Why were they holding you hostage?
To do a swap.
Swap with what?
Well, with the people that they wanted back, these Cossacks and people, they wanted back, and would do an exchange like they were doing across the wall in Berlin, or right up until recently, exchange of spies and people like that, the usual routine, political routine. No, it was very, very worrying, and I felt very concerned about my mates. Anyway, the funny thing was, to get back to a bit more human, I queued up at the mess there, and I had three meals, I couldn't move. And I was told there was an open-air cinema show, and that evening, and I was so blown out with all my starvation, and I went and sat outside waiting for this cinema show. And on the fourth anniversary of my incarceration, I heard Night and Day. Extraordinary coincidence, wasn't it? The music, and it was very moving. Anyway, it was so funny because the Germans, I was free to wander around for 2 or 3 days because I couldn't prove who I was. Having a rescue launch with 3 engines and a crew of 10, it was very hard to reconcile with aircraft. And I was held up by my own people. But all this damn nonsense. And I didn't get home till the 13th. And then I was held in London for an extra 24 hours on the way back for this nonsense. I thought I was a spy or something, going to blow up Churchill. And anyway, when I got back as well, I learned that the chaps were still at Luckenwalde, and no mention at all when they were coming. And quite by chance, I was living in Bucks at the time, my mother was dying down here in Brighton, and my wife told me as soon as she could, so we got on the train, came down here, and I was interested to learn that all the Aussies and New Zealanders and Canadians were being repatriated via the Hotel Metropole on the front here. So I phoned up, and there was no news, and I kept phoning up each day, and then I was told they were coming in probably 3 or 4 weeks later. And I went down there and met a lot of my old buddies. And by that time, I doubled my weight. I'd only been home a few weeks. Instead of weighing 6 stone, I weighed 12 stone.
Was that only the Aussies and New Zealands, or were the British repatriated?
No, they were. They went. No, these were for reshipment, you see, to get them all grouped together.
Had the British been repatriated by that time?
But most of us, yes, except the Luckenwalde chaps.
They were still there?
Well, these were they coming in, and they're from them, yes. But no, they've been there all the time, and this other camp. But the Luckenwalde was the one that was the tag end. The other one was released earlier on. I think someone called the bluff. I think it was up on the coast somewhere. I've got a vague recollection of someone calling the Russians bluff, and the officer, Russian officer there, couldn't really vouch for any more certainty about it, so he let them go.
Do you reckon they were held by the Russians there?
I'm not sure.
Was it sort of weeks?
Oh, it was weeks. It was weeks. It was 5 or 6 weeks, I should think. Perhaps my wife can tell. I just don't remember.
I know you wrote a letter, didn't you, to the newspaper?
Yes.
Regarding the Aldington Tolstoy.
Yes, yes.
Trial. Yes. What inspired you to?
Well, I was so disgusted with all this fuss about. Aldington, was it? I forget what his name was before. He was one of the chaps guarding looking after the Cossacks and various bodies of people, Georgians and people who were to be repatriated. I mean, what the devil was he to know about the Russian intention to destroy them? He was just doing a job. He was put in charge of his people and told to repatriate them. And God Almighty, I mean, what it must have been like for Roosevelt and Churchill when they their last meeting before Roosevelt died, he was a sick man, and I mean, God, if Churchill wasn't going to look after his own people first, who the hell was? I think it's disgraceful for people to get up and recriminate. If they've been through the experiences of the experience that I've been through, the emotions, the hatred and the loathing and the love, and I mean, you can love a man without being queer. I mean, things that sort of understanding. People are mad, and to stop recriminating now against that kind of decision, take it. It's bad enough going for Germans who were responsible for the Jewish persecution after all these years, because the facts are so distorted by younger generations who come in full of do-gooding. They've never really suffered, and They want to go through life a little bit and suffer. No, I think it's just graceful for Tolstoy, is it?
Yes, I think his main argument was that a lot of the people who were repatriated shouldn't have been because they weren't Soviet citizens, you know, that they were people, the old émigrés, and sort of women and children. Do you think that's a mitigating circumstance or not?
Yes, but if it were possible for us to know, I mean, how were we to know? We hadn't got their birth certificates. They were all classified. And how on earth could they know? I mean, it's like a black over here, his name's John Mackay. How the hell did they know he's a black one just come from Jamaica? So it's absurd. No, I think it's out of date now, all those things. That's over.
Yes, I know in your letter you said that the... I think you used the term muckraking.
Yes.
Stop.
Possibly.
Is that how you...
I do. I do agree with it, yes. I mean, there's a resurgence of Nazism in Germany now, I know. I was in Cologne, 3 years ago. With a mess up with the plane, and I had to spend the night, not in Cologne, Munich, where Hitler started. And I was very amused. There was a chappy trying to get a young boy to go and live with him at the next table, and I was very amused at all this. But further on, there was a long table laid up, and about half a dozen youngsters sitting, about teenagers, 18, 19, I suppose. And suddenly the rest of the party came in, and they all stood up and gave the Heil salute. And that's what's worrying me about the reunification of Germany at the moment. But you can't put labels on people for doing their duty. I mean, I don't suppose anybody sat down and gave chapter and verse of all these people and their origins. And if you've seen, as I did when I was in Poland, the Germans who were moved in there to develop the land, I suppose a lot of those people would prefer to remain Polish because they've got all their roots there. And how can you discriminate? How can you make dividing lines? And all the rigmarole of the things that have happened, all the different races that have been captured and incarcerated and moved around. Well, one of the interesting things was in Poland was the Germans coming in. Apparently, the king of Poland had Prussians fighting as mercenaries in the Crusades, and he gave a deed for land to be granted to this Prince of Prussia, and where he settled, and that's how Prussia was born. And the Germans are so ashamed of having a Polish association that this king of Poland had given them this deed. There was a great tapestry in Poznan, or one of the big cities there, which they, as soon as the Germans marched in, they'd been there since the Middle Ages, it was ripped down and burned. That was told to me by a Polish officer in the camp.
Did your letter to the the paper, I forget which paper it was.
Telegraph.
The Telegraph. did it create any stir? Did
oh,
you
God,
any
yes.
Response from
I've
it?
Had... old POW friends have rung me up. One from Zimbabwe has written to me. I've had two letters from him. And I had some disgusting nonsense from Canada, some paper. It's called The Great Holocaust Debate. And it's a reprint from Spotlight. And they're offering $50,000 to find a Holocaust victim. Good God! Everybody, even prisoner of war in Germany knew what was going on, and I've got dozens of friends who've lost all their Jewish friends who lost all their relations and going to Germany, so where some of them being repatriated, have taken up the